The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm, and along with Haley Stasiak, we are filling in for Brad Sessmatt. In true Warriors fashion, the players are coaching today. So I got a lot to get to. Yogi Roth is going to be breaking some things down with us with Pac-12 players in the NFL draft, some signing day impacts that he felt were in the Pac-12 schools, as well as Tyler Shuck's future, the Hamilton quarterback. He's now over at Oregon. Yogi has some big thoughts on what Tyler could do over the next couple of years. So a lot of really good stuff with that. And also Haley sat down with Christian Sam yesterday, so we're going to play that as well. We are quickly approaching the NFL Combine, quickly approaching the NFL Draft, so a lot to get to. But first, our rundown is brought to you by Sagicor Now. And Haley, first things first, when we were discussing what we should discuss in this opening topic, the biggest topics of the day, we both agreed, Chloe Kim.
You know, I have had the Olympics on kind of in the background as I've been doing stuff this weekend, and I saw that Chloe Kim, I think she was at like a 93 or something like that, going into her third run. So I was like, all right, I have to see this. All the talk surrounding her. She's 17 years old. Thinking back to a few years ago when I was 17, it's kind of like the stuff she's accomplished is just unfathomable. And then for her to, I think her final run was like a 98.
She had already won gold.
Yeah. It was a victory lap.
Yeah. It was a victory lap in women's snowboarding in the half pipe. She had already won gold. Then comes the encore is a 98. She was the only only person in the competition to score over a 90, and she did it twice. So just absolutely just a dominant performance, but also...
Well, especially to do it, though, in your victory lap, to get the 98 in your victory lap.
Totally.
Like, you could have just easily done your thing.
Yeah.
But she did her thing beyond her thing.
Yeah. So. First person in the half pipe to do back-to-back 1080s as well. I make it sound like I'm a big snowboarding guy. I grew up in Arizona, so what is snow? But the thing that caught my eye with Chloe, obviously she's a fantastic athlete, but her social media presence is just incredible. This is from 2 days ago. I'm so nervous, followed that up with, oh, and I also had two churros today, and they were pretty bomb. So if you ever get nervous, go eat a churro. Good life advice. Could be down for some ice cream right now. That was right after her, I believe, semifinals run. But right before she won gold, wish I finished my breakfast sandwich, but my stubborn self decided not to, and now I'm hangry.
That was in the middle of the competition.
Like, that's the best.
I tweeted this last night. I was like, I aspire to have that much chill in the biggest moments of my life, because to be able to just tweet that when you, at that point, she didn't know if she had won the gold. Yeah, unbelievable.
They should let athletes just have their phones during competitions like that for more gold like that.
Which that would have been interesting last night when the Golden State Warriors were coaching their own team.
Exactly. That leads us to the Suns losing to the Warriors 129-83. There's been quite a bit of controversy because Steve Kerr didn't call the plays. He let the players coach in that situation.
I love it.
So when there were timeouts, Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, they'd be calling these plays. So was this disrespectful to the Suns?
I don't think so at all. I mean, I think I could see where people are saying it's disrespectful. But if they're playing the game, they're playing it right, does it matter who's calling the plays? That's the way I look at it. I think Devin Booker came out and said it right.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So actually, this was interesting. My dad actually did this when we were in like middle school baseball. He didn't like the focus of the team. So he'd have a player come out with him at the third base coach, as third base coach, and do the signs and do everything to try to keep guys focused. And
that's what it takes.
I say my dad is the Steve Kerr of Little League baseball. So but a couple things. Kerr's an out of the box thinker, so he's going to try something like this to try to light a spark. The Warriors haven't played as well as they usually have over the past week or two. He said he didn't like their focus over the past couple of months. They're also one of the greatest teams ever in the NBA. Like, this compilation of talent, even with Draymond Green not dressing out, that's still just such an incredible, talented lineup. They can mix things up like that and take a flyer on something like that. and they'll be able to adjust to it no problem. So that's the other thing. We also talk so much in our Diamondbacks and baseball podcast, Diamonds in the Desert, about the dog days of summer mm-hmm. and how it can hit kind of the middle to two-thirds portion of the season, and just there isn't quite the spark. Guys are just kind of lagging through. This is February. This is right before the All-Star break. It's a long season. It's a long postseason. And usually the Warriors are at the very end of that long postseason. So it probably just blends all together. So to mix it up like that, I have no issue with it. They also won by 40.
Well, and that's
what's,
the thing.
What's the issue?
With the Suns and the way the Suns have been playing all season, I mean, I don't think it was... If they had been playing any other team, I think it would have played out the same way. I think it would have been... It's not because it's the Suns.
My next note, they could easily do this roughly 50% of the teams
in
this league. That's the talent disparity right now. In the NBA, they don't miss a beat. And for those that think this is disrespectful, what's more disrespectful, them doing this or having a Greg Popovich type where he sits all four of his starters on a given night to give them rest? That's an honest question. What's more disrespectful? Sure. So I don't get the problem with that.
It keeps it fun, too.
Yeah. Elfrid Payton, in his second game with the Suns, a 29-point performance. He's getting the short tryout. It's about 26 games he'll have with the Suns as their point guard right now. Obviously very thin due to injury. They made that trade from Orlando to bring him in. And it's going to be interesting to see how he plays once Devin Booker is back. Obviously, that's going to be the key to see how those two interact, because Devin Booker is the one that you need to kind of build that around. What's your take on Peyton early in these two games?
At this point, I think the Suns need to do whatever they can do to get something going.
Mm-hmm.
So if it means bringing him in and he's doing well and it's working for them, then let him keep doing his thing and see how he develops and adjusts and gets along with the team. And yeah, like I said, do whatever it takes.
Yeah. He's scoring right now on a pretty depleted lineup. He's rebounding. He's getting assists, which is something that the point guard struggled to do earlier this year. Steve Keim gets an extension, the Cardinals GM, through 2022. I think that this was a no-brainer.
Well, and as we were prepping, we talked about GMs in Arizona sports, and we said Steve Keim or Mike Hazen, and all of us kind of said, yeah, Steve Keim because of his tenure and his track record. I think this is a good move for the Cardinals. He's come in and he's had success. Keep that success going, and they're in a turning point in with this team. So keep it going and see what he can do with it.
Yeah, and early in his tenure, he had to find a head coach. He did that in Bruce Arians. He had to find a quarterback. He made a pretty good trade for Carson Palmer, where he sent a sixth rounder over to Oakland. So he's proven that he can do this. He has drafted well. He got David Johnson in the third round, John Brown in the third round, Tyrann Mathieu. They've drafted late well with these contributors. He has also been the master of the one-year deal, getting guys in the twilight of their career and getting them on a one-year deal where they're very productive players. He's done it with Carlos Dansby twice, and usually it's kind of in that front seven where they're able to really do that. Dwight Freeney comes to mind as well. He was a great kind of, late addition to that defense. So that, I think it's a no-brainer. You can have sustainable success with a guy in the front office like Steve Keim.
Well, and it shows in the press release that the Cardinals sent out, he's got the seventh best winning percentage since his promotion as general manager. He's gone 49-30-1 there. So that speaks to that as well.
Yeah, and even with the last 2 years that were pretty injury riddled, and they have struggled probably not to the standards that they've wanted, but mm-hmm. they've been competitive, and that's all you can really ask for. I know the game's 2 days away, but ASU Arizona squaring off Thursday night. Arizona currently 17, ASU 25. I think this is going to be a really fun game. These games are usually a little bit closer at Wells Fargo than when they're down in McHale.
To get it back to Wells Fargo after being in McHale and that tough loss that ASU had, it's been so fun to watch ASU basketball this season. And, I mean, I went to ASU as a student. I don't think I went to a single basketball game. But now, like, just to see the students getting out there and the fans wanting to go out there and the talent of Arizona and having these two match up, it's exciting. And then on Arizona's side, just to see the talent, like, grow mm-hmm. and develop through this season, I think has been fun too. So getting them at this point in the season at Wells Fargo with a different environment, like you said, the McHale is going to be fun.
the game's going is already a sellout. So if you don't have tickets, you can go through.
I think I saw something you can get them on a Ticketmaster.
Yeah, yeah, you can you can still get through the the third party. But if you get a chance, go watch DeAndre Ayton in person. This guy is an Avenger. Like, he's not a basketball player. He's an Avenger.
References.
He, like, watching, I haven't seen a 7-footer move the way he does. And I think that's where ASU is going to struggle. That's where they struggled last time. That's where most teams struggle, because they can't replicate a guy like DeAndre Ayton in practice. And then you have Dusan Ristic as well. It's the same story the past couple of years with Arizona, where they have a lot of size. Arizona State has the very shifty guards.
Mm-hmm.
ASU is really hitting their stride. The first weekend sweep for Bobby Hurley this past weekend against the LA schools. And then U of a tough loss to UCLA on Thursday. But then they were able to right the ship against USC. So a lot going on in this state, as always. It's going to be fun over the next couple of weeks. Coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show, we have Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network's Elite 11. We're going to cover a lot of ground with him on all things NFL draft, signing day, a lot of things going on in the Pac-12. That's coming up next. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Jordan Hamm and Haley Stasiak filling in for Brad. And with signing day just happening, plenty of talent going to Pac-12 schools. A lot of players from the conference also moving on to the NFL draft. We thought we'd bring in Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network, from the Elite 11. This guy does everything, documentarian. Yogi, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime.
So it's been a busy offseason for ASU and Arizona with their coaching changes. What do you make of the current state of both programs?
That's a big question, and I love it. I think I look at them as really entertaining. You know, if you look at our roles, right, as broadcasters, performers, reporters, we want the entertaining stories. I mean, find two more interesting places in the country or find a better state in the country with the entertainment value have and the intrigue from both head coaches. I mean, Herm Edwards is probably the most intriguing head coach in the country this year. There's going to be so much attention to him and how he not only re-engages with college football, but also how does their quote-unquote new model work. So really excited about that. And then, of course, Kevin Sumlin. What I love the most, and then I told him this on our signing day show on the Pac-12 Networks, was his vulnerability at his press conference, something I've never seen in my career when someone gets hired. You know, we've seen sometimes these awkward press conferences when people and coaches get fired and it's emotional and it's raw, but I thought the stuff he said of when he got let go, you know, confidence dipped, needed to take a break, went on his first vacation, and then his friends and his peers at the coaches' convention kind of got his confidence and his swag back. And then he got offered the job, point being that he probably doesn't take the job if he's offered it in early December, like most jobs are offered to, you know, head coaches that are hot commodities, which was him. So I think it's amazing. You know, someone would have been this year's Chip Kelly in terms of the hottest coach not coaching in the college ranks. So to get him at Arizona when he could have waited for, you know, a more well-known or higher performing institution in college football historically, and he didn't, and he went for it. So I can't wait. And then you look at the quarterback spot there, and it's always a draw at both places.
Who do you think is in better shape to succeed quickly heading into the spring, ASU or Arizona?
Well, I would probably say in the spring, Arizona State, just because Rob Likens returns, Manny returns, you know, Nikhil Harry returned, you know, some fixtures on that team, play callers, you know, practice-wise, you know, some coaches that have been around even though they lost their coordinators, position coaches have remained. They're probably in a better position to do more in terms of install and actual football in the spring. But if you said project out to media days, I mean, you know, end of July, who would get a first-place vote between the two? I wouldn't be shocked if Arizona did. I mean, you look at all the players returning on this defense. It was crazy young. You look at Khalil Tate, who will be on the cover of most preseason magazines. In this conference, he's probably one of the most popular quarterbacks, if not the most popular quarterback, just based on what he did a year ago. So I look at both of them and probably a different answer, but there's clearly intrigue there.
Arizona Cardinals in the market for a quarterback, and the Pac-12 has two really good quarterbacks going into this year's draft. They might be gone by 15, but you never know what may happen. But with the case of Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, just what separates those two guys from the rest of this really deep quarterback field this year?
It's a really good question. I mean, I'm going to get to that, but I think of like Luke Falk at 15. Doesn't he remind you of Kurt Warner? You know, if you really study the tape and watch how they played, how they get rid of the ball, how they can make spot throws, it might be an interesting place because I think Luke's stock is only going to be rising as they get through the combine. But to answer your question, I think it's hard. I think right now if I wanted somebody to play, I might take Josh just based on his functional football acumen. You know, three coordinators, 3 years, three different styles of offense from spread to pro to under center and the gun, the pistol. I mean, he's done a lot when you look at the type of plays he's had to call in the huddle. Sam hasn't played as much, you know, didn't play, a season compared to what Josh has done. But overall, I think they're both going to be stars. I think what Sam does in the pocket, I can't tell you the last time we've seen it in college football from a guy who's 6'3", 220 pounds. You know, he moves around at times like Baker Mayfield and Johnny Manziel in terms of being off-platform, but he's massive. I mean, and he's just grown into his body. So I'm excited for Baltimore. I saw Josh a couple weeks ago. Going to go watch Sam work out later this week. He's training with Jordan Palmer in Southern California. And I think the ceiling is so high for those two. I think they love the game. I think the criticism on Josh are bogus and made by people that don't know him and talk to people who are multiple people removed away from him. So I look forward to both of them getting their opportunity to shine in front of GMs and the actual decision makers.
What's the X factor going to be for those two guys to be successful in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I really think that the X factor in all my time around this game and this position, of course you have to be competitive. Of course you have to make throws. And you have to really love the craft. And I think within that love of the craft, you have to be a seeker. And that's really the word that I've really honed in on with quarterbacks. You have to be willing and have the unique desire to seek not only the best version of yourself, but the answers to an offense. You know, when it gets hard, you have to seek out the best training. You have to seek out the best study habits. You have to seek out the best off-field training regimen. You have to seek out the best style in which you live your life. You have to really be a searcher in terms of the tools that are out there. Because now it's a different era, right? We're seeing true freshmen like Jake Fromm, Tua Tagovailoa, highlighted in the national championship game, play as true freshmen. And I don't think it's because their coaches are that much better. They are. But it's because they can seek out all the information they want. When you want to learn how Tom Brady trains, get a Facebook page. You know, you want to learn high-performance psychology, get an iTunes password, an Apple podcast, and listen to Michael Gervais, the leading psychologist in high performance. I mean, the tools are right in front of you. And if you're truly a seeker, I think that you can separate yourself. And I believe, in my experience with those two young men, that's how I would define them.
Talking to Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Networks and the Elite 11. So ASU is sending five to the NFL Combine. Kalen Ballage, Demario Richard, Sam Jones, Christian Sam, and JoJo Wicker. Who among that group do you see really rising through the NFL draft ranks as we approach April?
Can you say that list one more time?
Kalen Ballage, Demario Richard, Sam Jones, Christian Sam, and JoJo Wicker.
Well, that's going to be interesting. You know, JoJo Wicker is an intriguing prospect coming off the edge. Christian Sam is such a consistent player, right? You can see him on special teams. You can see him like a Michael or Eric Kendricks when they came out of college, a consistent backer. But I'm really intrigued with Kalen Ballage just because he's such a unique body type. You know, I can remember I'd go out to practice in training camp or even in pregame warmups, and I'd be standing there with Ted Robinson, my partner, and I called the Territorial Cups in the last game of the season. And we're watching him warm up, and I'm saying, "Wow, look at N'Keal Harry." And you realize it's number seven and not number one. And we'll say, whoa, this guy can really run. And you talk to the staff, and they say the same thing in practice. You know, he's the fastest guy on the team, or at least he was a year ago, in my understanding. He's a guy that can run like a wideout in terms of, you know, running routes. He can catch the ball. Just you look at his stats and what he's done out of the backfield. So I'm intrigued there. And Demario will be an every-down type back that he'll obviously make somebody's roster, in my opinion. So I don't know. I think each of them have a different story, but I guess I'm probably most interested in Kalen Ballage and what people think, because I think he'll test off the charts.
keeping it on the draft. Isaiah Oliver in Colorado is a Phoenix guy. He did just about everything for Brophy College Prep, but he was extremely under-recruited. Now he's expected to go in the first rounds of the draft. How have you seen him develop over the years?
Love him. My number one quarterback on my board out of the Pac-12, one of the top corners in the country. Look at how long he is. And you know, the way that college is evolving, you know, there's so much emphasis on playing press coverage. You know, you have to disrupt the timing. I mean, Andy Reid said this a couple of years, I think. High school and college football are 5 years ahead of the NFL. That means your defense is better play catch-up. And my point is that with all the run-pass option stuff, the zone read stuff, the movement from the quarterback, there's more athletic quarterbacks playing in the game. The only chance you have is if you can play man coverage. You can run with guys. You can disrupt and alter timing. That's what he does. And what I love about him the most, and did a little feature on him prior to one of the games this year, is he's a true student of his game. He's a student of his craft. Again, I think he's a seeker of that position. And I think playing DB now, if you're studious, it's easier than ever because there's not as many route combinations, not as much happening, in my opinion, on the offensive side of the football. You can predict easier. Playbooks have shrunk. So I look forward to him being a star. You know, obviously banged up at the end of the year. Hopefully that's allowed him now to be fully healthy, but also be even fresher, you know, because he didn't play in a handful of games. So I'm stoked for him. He's a star, in my opinion, and one of the kindest guys I've probably been around. Talked to his staff, the way he operates off the field, I think he's perfect. I mean, he's one of those guys that you wouldn't be shocked if 5 years from now he's NFL's Man of the Year.
You worked extensively with Tyler Shuck at the Elite 11, another Arizona guy now at Oregon. I know that you watched his tape extensively, but getting to meet him in person, what really stood out to you besides his hair?
He did research, yeah. Tyler's great. Tyler's one of my favorite guys in my my 10th year of Elite 11, my 18th year coming up in college football. And been around a lot of those quarterbacks, and they're all unique in their own right, but Tyler defines what I was saying earlier. You know, it's a true seeker. I mean, so much so that in our conversations in the offseason, I challenge him on that. And he'd write me back, you know, 5 pages worth of notes around what he thinks it means to seek and, you know, really try to live on the razor's edge of your craft. He does that. You know, I mean, this young man's a star. What I love probably the most about a situation, which is kind of an anomaly now, is if you don't play in your first 2 years in college football, majority of quarterbacks are transferring or thinking about it or having – dealing with pressure to do so, Tyler gets to sit for 2 years. I think you're at least for one. I imagine for two. I don't know if Justin Herbert's going to leave early or not, but he'll get to sit and learn behind an All-American caliber quarterback. And when he plays, he's not going to have to figure it out. You know, he's going to be able to rip it. And that's what I think is what I would do if I was a quarterback coach. I think that's the way you want to recruit and set up your room and your depth chart and the recruiting classes. I think he's a star. He got the gravitational pull that I call the it factor when he walks into the room where guys want to be around him, but he also elevates their play, which isn't the easiest thing to do in an age, what I call the iGen generation. These guys aren't used to communicating. They aren't great leaders. They have average, at best, verbal skills in small groups, and Tyler's not bad. You know, he's a total alpha dog, and I think he's gonna be a star. I put my name all over Tyler Shuck.
Great stuff. As always, Yogi, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Cool, bro. Later.
That was Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network's Elite 11 documentarian. This guy really does do it all. A lot of really interesting things there. We covered a lot with him, but what really jumped out to you in terms of what Yogi had to say?
I think it was interesting his mention of ASU heading into the spring being the candidate for early success, and then by the end of July thinking that Arizona was going to be that team. So just the difference of what can happen over those few months, mm-hmm. and him knowing that and expecting that, I think that was interesting to see his take on that.
Yeah, championships are won in the offseason, so it will be interesting. Coming up next, with pitchers and catchers reporting tomorrow for the Diamondbacks, we're going to take a look at the really quiet offseason and what we anticipate for this 2018 season. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmat Show. Haley Stasiak and Jordan Hamm here filling in for Brad today. It is February 13th. We are hours at this point away from the official start of spring training with pitchers and catchers reporting tomorrow on Valentine's Day. Jordan and I have been talking this past month probably, right, about how our Valentine's Day date is out at Salt River. with
well, it makes it sound like we're going on a date. No, we're
not us, but
I have a date with a diamond and a baseball. So,
yes. So before we get into all the nitty gritty with spring training, let's talk about Yoshi. Well, he asked us to call him Yoshi. Yeah. Yoshi Hirano's introduction yesterday. What was your biggest takeaway from that?
I think just getting to talk to Mac Hayashi, who's the director of operations for the Pacific Rim for the Diamondbacks. So he scouts that entire area, tries to bring those players specifically, especially in Japan, to the Diamondbacks organization. And they've tried quite a few times, but this is the first time that the franchise has been able to bring over a major league ready player, his first team with the Diamondbacks. And kind of the takeaway in talking with Mac was that he's confident that Yoshi will be a good closer candidate and successful with the Diamondbacks because of his ability to throw the split finger. And he kind of said that guys who have similar makeups to Yoshi and similar backgrounds have had success in the major leagues because of that split finger. So that's something certainly to keep an eye on, as well as the way this closer role shakes out. I think probably the big three candidates right now, Brad Boxberger, Archie Bradley, and Yoshi Hirano, and you could probably throw in Neftali Feliz. Mm-hmm. He was a minor league invite as well, but he has experience as well. So it's not as clear-cut as maybe last year, where it was Fernando Rodney is the guy. But I think there's plenty of really good options, and that's been the bulk of the moves they've made this offseason, is to address that bullpen.
And that's not to say that they won't have a go-to guy come season.
No,
but going into spring training, there's lots of options here.
Well, look, last year going into spring training, we all thought that it was a good chance that Archie Bradley was going to be a starter or be in the minor leagues, and neither of that happened, and he had the best year of his career. So
with Hirano, you mentioned the Diamondbacks are his first team from playing in Japan. Mm-hmm. He's also the only second Japanese player to play with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, at the big league level. They had Saito, another reliever from a couple years ago, and they also have a player in the minor leagues. This is the second player of Japanese descent.
And we talked to Mac about the language barrier there. I thought it was interesting what he told us with the guys that speak Spanish. There's a few of them in the clubhouse, so they have that interaction. Mm-hmm. But the Japanese-speaking players, a lot of times it's only one of them.
Yeah.
And so there is that language barrier, but Yoshi did say that he and his wife are going to be taking English lessons, and he hopes that she can help tutor him to get him ready.
Yeah, his wife and his kids will help tutor him. It's definitely, it's always interesting to see guys from other countries come into this league and, see how they, develop and how they're integrated. Obviously, I think all eyes are going to be on Shohei Ohtani over mm-hmm. with the Angels.
Which is somebody that Yoshi said he cannot wait to go up against.
Yeah, and I guess he's had some success against him. So, it's going to be definitely a fun year in the NL West, and even just with this Diamondbacks team, to see how the rosters shake out.
Speaking of rosters shaking out, mm-hmm. the topic all offseason, the free agency, and the lack of hot stove, mm-hmm. J.D. Martinez. And the news on the debate on, is he going to the Red Sox? He doesn't like what the Red Sox are offering. Mm-hmm. Is he coming back to the Diamondbacks? The Diamondbacks have been in talks. It was reported that the Diamondbacks have, in fact, met with Boris and JD. Ken Kendrick has spoken with him. But now we're hearing that, well, for a while we were hearing it was likely. Now we're hearing it's unlikely.
Yeah, and, yesterday Brad was saying that this could be a bargaining chip for Scott Boris to go to the Red Sox and say, hey, we can – JD likes it here in Arizona. We can sign a deal. It's amazing how stagnant this offseason has been, to the point where now they're going to have a free agent camp at IMG Academy in Florida because there are so many guys, so many top flight guys that don't have MLB homes right now. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I think if you're the Diamondbacks, you just try to kind of play on that emotion a little bit and say, look, you had the best 3 months of your career here. You now have Alex Avila, who JD actually kind of sold Alex to come there when Alex was doing his due diligence on the Diamondbacks. JD said this is a good team to be on. So you try to play to that strength, and if it's a short-term deal, it's a short-term deal, and it could be a situation where you even get him on a one-year deal, and if the Diamondbacks don't have the hot start that they had last year, you say, hey, we'll look hard at trading you, because mm-hmm. you could get a lot in return for him. It's just so tough the way the salary cap is, or excuse me, the salaries are kind of shaking out with this team. There are some big contracts that are really kind of handcuffing them. And Mike Hazen did say at the beginning of the offseason he's going to have to get creative. And I think he's done a nice job bringing in some pieces, much like last year, some under-the-radar pieces that I think are going to be really good. I think Alex Avila is going to be a good fit here. But it's just going to be something to definitely to keep an eye on, really, up until opening day, because there is so much talent out there.
Well, and yesterday on MLB Network's Hot Stove, Archie Bradley was on, and they asked him about it. Hey, do you know anything? Because he tweeted something about, it was like, cough, cough, at JD mm-hmm. Martinez. And Archie said he's been FaceTiming JD pretty frequently. Like, he said he's optimistic, quote-unquote, optimistic that it'll happen. Obviously, hearing lots of different reports, and it'll be good for the Diamondbacks. I think it'll be good for the clubhouse just in general, but we'll see.
Yeah, and it could create a really nice buzz right at the beginning of the season that they brought in this guy that was just a world masher for them. And to protect the middle of that lineup, the Paul Goldschmidts, the A.J. Pollocks, the Jake Lambs, just to have another thumper in there wouldn't hurt at all.
Something else Archie mentioned on Hot Stove yesterday was that the entire team has basically been at Salt River for 2 weeks already. Mind you, tomorrow marks the official start of spring training. So for the entire squad to already be out there is pretty impressive. Let's talk about breakout candidates for the spring and just in the season in general. Who is your guy?
I'm going to go with Ketel Marte. This was a guy that tore it up at AAA at the beginning of the year. He was a guy that was probably one of the last guys to be sent down at last year's spring training, and all he did was just tear it up there. He got called up, a couple spot starts here and there, but then you saw his role really start to flourish in September and October, or excuse me, in August he hit 280, and really saw his numbers kind of spike with those opportunities coming in, and then the postseason. I mean, he had a great wild card game against the Rockies, a very solid but short series against the Dodgers, and I think that's just something you can really build upon, and use that momentum. He is a young guy. He's 24 years old, but he almost has 1,000 plate appearances already between like a year and a half with the Mariners and now like three quarters of a season with the Diamondbacks. So I would say that they have a lot of different guys that they can filter in at shortstop. And I think Lovello likes to kind of use that platoon there. But I think when Marte's in there, I think he'll have a really big impact this year.
What's impressive to me about Marte too is his ability to bounce back from the adversity. And we discussed this a lot with the whole entire team last year of mm-hmm. just like being able to shift around when needed. But after his mother passed away and he went on the bereavement list, he came back and really still was on his game and he didn't let it affect him. And just being able to do that, I think speaks a lot to him and his talent and his character. So my guy is Taijuan Walker, because
another person from that Seattle trade.
It was all there for him last year, and every post game, after his starts, he always talked about, I know what I did wrong. And he owned up to it. Early in the season, I talked to him. He worked with Grand Canyon University's pitching coach, Rich Dorman, and I did a story on that. And Rich and Taijuan were telling me how they both worked together about owning up to that and just being able to look at it and be like, okay, discipline, all of that. So I think it'll turn around for him this year, and he'll be able to focus more on that discipline too.
And I think just not having to go through the offseason of changing settings. He's only been with the Mariners leading into the Diamondbacks. And he's one of the few, it was always really interesting hearing his post-game interviews, because he was very candid and he was very honest. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, you know, they didn't get to me. He was just like, I was too jacked up for this game.
Right.
Like, I was too excited.
I needed
to calm down. I needed to do that. He's not afraid to talk about his feelings and kind of where his emotions take him during the game. We saw great results from him this year, and he isn't asked to be the guy in this rotation. He's just asked to be a solid contributor. And when you have a Zach Greinke in front of you, a Robbie Ray, you have a Pat Corbin, beside you, and a Zach Godley, that's a really solid five right there with Taijuan Walker. So there's not, I think there's always going to be, pressure on him because he was a top guy, but he doesn't have to be that ace that they're calling for right now. He can continue to develop. And I think the Diamondbacks coaching staff did a really good job with him, throughout the year to really get him in some really good grooves where there were like four or five starts where he would just be lights out.
We are looking forward to spring training and getting out to Salt River and seeing these 2018 Diamondbacks get started. Coming up next on the Brad Cesmat Show, I sat down with former ASU linebacker Christian Sam yesterday. We talk about his preparations for the NFL Combine. We're joined now by former ASU linebacker and 2018 NFL draft prospect Christian Sam. Christian, thanks so much for coming on. And I hear you're down in Florida. Where exactly are you at?
How you doing? Thanks for having me. Right now I'm in Boca Raton, Florida. I'm training at XPE with Tony Villani. So,
how are things going?
It's going real good. It's real good. It was, the adjustment at first was a change. Training scenery just changed in general, but I've settled in and it's real good. I'm working with Tony and the other guys from around the country, so it's real nice. I like it.
What exactly went into your decision to forgo your last year of eligibility at ASU and declare for the draft?
I'd been there, for 4 years. A big thing for me is graduating. I graduated in 3.5 years. That was a goal of mine I had. My family background, I'm Nigerian, so academics is taken real serious, and I made sure I graduated first. If I didn't graduate, I wouldn't have left. And then I felt like my skills, I was ready to, pursue that next step in my career and make that jump into the next level, and I felt it was time and I was ready.
Let's take a little trip down memory lane here. When you signed with Arizona State, what were the emotions of getting that next chapter started, and how do those emotions compare to what you're feeling as you prepare for the combine?
To be honest, it didn't feel real until the first game of my freshman year. I was like, wow, I'm actually in college now. You go through summer school and, the off-season grind, and, you kind of just, as a freshman, everything moving fast. And then the first game came, and I was like, wow, I'm actually here, and now, three and a half years down the line, I'm, same, almost same thing, but it kind of hits you a little quicker. Once you graduate and then, I declared, I really, for real now, I was going to be on my own soon. And I was on my own at school, but I really wasn't on my own, and you start training, you're by yourself, you're taking care of things on your own again. And it's a different feeling, but it's a good feeling, it's a blessing.
We're joined again by Christian Sam, former ASU linebacker, training for the Combine in Florida. You were the leading tackler for the Sun Devils in 2017. Personally, what would you say that your strengths are?
My strengths, to me, I'm like the new breed of linebackers. I can run, I can hit, I can cover. I do it all. It's a new breed of linebackers now. It's not just one-dimensional. You got to be able to fly around, and I feel like that's my strong suit, As a younger guy, playing cornerback in my earlier days of football, running track, I feel like my athleticism, is probably my, my biggest strong suit, as well as my physicality.
Do you have a current pro player that you try to, whose game you try to emulate yourself?
Oh, yeah, Bobby Wagner from the Seattle Seahawks.
And why is that?
Because I feel like we're not on the same level, of course he's all pro, all pro, pro bowler, but I feel like we have the same, same similarities. He's smart. He studies the game. He's athletic. He's strong. He's big. He makes plays. I feel like, I look at him, I see myself, if I could ever get to his level of play, that'd be a major accomplishment.
Since the season ended, what has been the focus in these last few months as you prepare?
Just making sure I'm taking care of my body, eating right, sleeping right, doing everything I'm told to do, trusting Tony, because he's a great guy, he's a guru, and just making sure I'm honing in on my skills, on the 40-yard dash, all the field work and stuff like that, just making sure I'm taking care of everything I need to do to give myself the best, chance possible to get drafted as high as possible. So,
what were the biggest things that you learned at ASU that you plan on taking on to this next level?
Taking care of your responsibilities, when you get to college, when you're in high school, you have your parents there, unless you stay close home, but, I'm from Dallas, Texas, I ventured off and went to Arizona State, so one thing I had to learn immediately was taking care of my own responsibilities, making sure I'm doing stuff on time, because someone's not going to be there, to wake me up or tell me I got to do this or do that, I have to make sure I did it myself. That was the first thing that I learned. Responsibility, wash my clothes, clean the dishes, just cook my own food, stuff like that you don't do when you're in high school because you have your parents there to help you do that. But the stuff like that, that was the first big major thing I learned, you know, to take care of your own and make sure you're taking care of your responsibilities.
Christian, thanks again for the time, and best of luck with everything going forward.
Thank you.
Good stuff from Christian Sam. That's going to be on tonight's Brad Sesmatz Football AZ on Fox Sports Arizona. Haley, you're actually hosting this episode.
Taking it over.
What else is going to be on this edition?
So you'll see Christian Sam, as you mentioned. We're going to talk about the rest of the Arizona ties that are going to be at the Combine. ASU's got five players. Arizona's got one. And then there's about three high school players that went on to different colleges that will be there as well. We'll have Audibles back again, and we're going to talk about a community in Eastern Arizona that rallies around their football team, and then we'll have Christian Kirk, who's working out for the Combine in North Phoenix at Exos. So lots of good stuff.
Awesome. Jason and I also did the recruiting roundup. Jason had one of the funniest lines I've ever heard him say. So if that doesn't make you tune in, I don't know what will. Thanks so much for tuning into the Brad Sesmatz Show. Thanks to all of our partners, all of AZ Central, as well as Fox Sports Arizona and Sagicor Now. Thanks to Eric Sorensen for helping us keep us afloat, and Jared Nielsen as well. He's on the ones and twos. For Haley Stasiak, I'm Jordan Hamm. Thanks for tuning in.